live and local
from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
We are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't stenciled on your locker.
It's Rep Game with RP3, Raymond Parts III.
One of God's own prototypes. A high-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it? Yeah, we have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rep Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
He's got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Jerome, short. That time, Diakite, a race for it. Into the hands of Clark. Got a chance to win it here. Up the front, here's Diakite for the win. For the tie, Diakite squares it at 70.
Good morning, Acadiana. How are you on this brisk Monday morning? This is the Rap Game with RP3, and I'm your host, Raymond Parts III, on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can give us a call today on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. That was the sound of one of the most insane and entertaining Elite Eights I've experienced in my lifetime. Lots of complaints about how there was a lack of drama in the first weekend of the tournament. Even though you had three 5-12 upsets, there weren't really any big upsets. If you remember, last year was the first time ever that a number one seed would lose to a 16 seed. That's what Virginia did last year. You didn't have any of that kind of high drama this time around. First weekend was pretty much kind of chalky. Like I said, with the exception of a few 5-12 upsets. But then came the Elite Eight. And what a thrilling Elite Eight it was for us. Sweet 16 started off somewhat kind of ho-hum, right? Gonzaga easily took care of a very good Florida State team. Texas Tech took care of Michigan. Those were fairly lopsided. We'll get to the lopsided loss by LSU to Michigan State. My initial thoughts on that is LSU got outplayed. Michigan State was the better team. Better coach team, but also better. They just played better. Duke survived a scare from Vitek in the Sweet 16. Kentucky was able to hold off a very good Houston team. And Virginia held off an Oregon team that was, let's be honest, probably one of the ugliest games of the tournament. That was on Thursday. That Sweet 16 game between Oregon and Virginia was woof-tastic if there ever was one. But Purdue upending Tennessee kind of started things for us back on Thursday. But the big shocker came on Friday, right? Auburn absolutely curb stomped North Carolina. If your bracket took a hit like mine did on Thursday when one of your Final Four teams was eliminated in Tennessee, which a lot of us had that, the bracket took even a bigger hit when Auburn curb stomped the number one seed, North Carolina Tar Heels, thus eliminating any possibility of a national championship game between Duke and North Carolina. No Tobacco Road national championship game. That was taken care of. So you're like, okay, well, what's next? Can Auburn keep this going? But then came the Elite Eight games. Gonzaga was all over Texas Tech. The Zags, the one seed out of the West, they were playing to their tempo, how they wanted to play the game in the first half, and Texas Tech switched it on a dime on them in the second half and pulled away with a six-point win. It was that kind of swing. And the Red Raiders are heading to the Final Four for the first time in program history. Also on Saturday was Purdue and Virginia. And that was one of the more entertaining Elite Eight games I've seen in quite a long time. We heard the clip. I mean, so many things had to go right for Virginia just to force overtime. They miss the free throw. They somehow get the rebound. The ball goes back into the backcourt. They bring it back up. The guy is now right there for the putback as time expires to force overtime. And I'm watching it live, and I go, there went Purdue's chance. When something crazy happens like that at the end of regulation, 9 times out of 10, a team does not rebound from that. They don't bounce back from that. And Purdue fought hard, but comes up short as Virginia, a year after losing in the first round, the first number one seed to lose to a 16 seed, and the most maligned team in college basketball, nationally speaking, because they play that defense and their offense is a struggle to watch. They're going to their first Final Four since 1984. I was in elementary school. Cody Schuetz was not born. That's how long it's been. So you had one team punch its ticket that had never been to the Final Four, upsetting the number one seed. You had another team that was the most maligned team in college basketball with the disappointment of last year's historic loss, fighting and clawing its way. It gets to the Final Four for the first time since 1984. But then came yesterday. Woo! Then came yesterday. An all-SEC regional final. Kentucky versus Auburn. And there was going to be no way that Auburn was going to win this game, right? There was going to be no way. They lost one of their best players to an ACL injury. He wasn't even courtside for the game until the halftime. But then he comes and they deck him out in a wheelchair, Cody. He was there. They brought him out in a wheelchair. And somehow, Bruce Pearl's team, with their little undersized point guard, against mighty, mighty Kentucky. The blue blood of all blue bloods. Auburn finds a way. Auburn found a way to take out Kentucky. Auburn, who preseason expectations were immense for this team. They were ranked in the top 10, if I remember correctly. This is a team that was the co-regular season champion the year before, remember? And that they had their early exit in the NCAA tournament, and it was a big disappointment. And we know all the baggage that comes along with Bruce Pearl. He's the most entertaining coach left in the NCAA tournament. The jokes already began that this great historic run for Auburn will be vacated within 2 years. He's demonstrative. He's got a big personality. But as much as I hate Auburn, and trust me, there's no one on the airwaves for 103.7 The Game that hates Auburn more than I do. They're a fun team to watch in this tournament. They got hot for the SEC tournament, and what did they do? They just marched right through. Marched right through, won the SEC tournament there in Nashville. They absolutely slapped around Tennessee in the championship game, if you remember right. And that elevated Auburn up to a 5 seed. And this is a team that nearly lost in the first round of this tournament to New Mexico State. That was a one-point game for them. 1 point? Auburn nearly lost in the first round of this year's tournament. But it survived in advance. And they punched their ticket to their first ever Final Four. And they did so by beating the three blue bloods of college basketball. If there's four blue bloods, if you want to say that there's four traditional blue bloods of men's college basketball, it's Duke, it's Kansas, it's Kentucky, it's North Carolina. Auburn beat three of those teams to get to the Final Four. They took out Kansas in the second round. They upset the one seed North Carolina in the Sweet 16, and then they take down John Calipari in Kentucky in the Elite Eight. Is there a team that's more confident about their abilities than the Auburn Tigers in this left in this tournament? No. They're the Giant Slayer. You think they're going to be intimidated by Virginia? Nope. So you now you got two teams making their first trips to the Final Four. If either Texas and Texas Tech and Auburn are both trying to become the first team in 20 years to win a national title in its first ever appearance in the Final Four. The last team to do that was the UConn Huskies back in 1999 when they upset Duke in the national championship game. And speaking of Duke, if your bracket wasn't destroyed by Auburn beating North Carolina and then beating Kentucky and Tennessee losing to Purdue in the Sweet 16, then I'm pretty sure the majority of brackets across this great nation of ours took a massive hit when Zion Williamson and his double-double show, the projected number one overall pick in this June's NBA draft, fell to Michigan State in Sparty, 68-67. The Blue Devils had Zion Williamson, who got himself a double-double. The Blue Devils didn't have Cassius Winston. Now, this is a cat that NBA scouts believe can't play at the next level. He's not even a first-round draft pick by most projections. Maybe a second round. He's the junior point guard for the Michigan State Spartans. Hey, did you watch him play this weekend? Did you watch what he did to LSU? Did you see what he did against Duke? Double-double. His double-double was assist. Sparty looks formidable. They look like they have a purpose. They have focus. And once again, this has cropped up a few times, Cody. In recent years, we live in this one-and-done era for men's basketball. Once again, the biggest stars are not in the Final Four. Once again, the biggest stars, there's no Zion Williamson. You don't have the Blue Bloods. No Duke, no North Carolina, no Kansas. You got Texas Tech, Auburn, Virginia, and Michigan State. I, for one, love it. But once again, a lot of those teams, what do they all share? A lot of them have veteran guys on their roster. They have guys that have been there two, three, sometimes 4 years. So even though the talent, these one-and-done players may be filling up the rosters in the NBA, the teams that are making runs and the teams that are competing for national championships in college are the opposite for the most part. That's an interesting thing. But what a terrific weekend of college basketball and a tremendous Elite Eight, one of the best Elite Eight I've watched in quite a long time. When we come back here on the Rap Game with RP3, we're going to give an early look at this year's Final Four matchups. Right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsa III, here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. We had a tremendous Elite Eight. That Purdue-Virginia game was something to behold. And the rest of the games were entertaining as well. Kentucky, Auburn, and that Michigan State-Duke contest. But before we look at the Final Four, which will be played on Saturday, and then the national championship game will take place on Monday, it's time to check in on how our brackets are doing. Cody Schutz, my friend.
Yes.
How's your bracket doing, brother?
Very poorly. I mean, that's not to be surprised, though. Not a big surprise there. I am currently 31st out of, I guess, 134 is total. But
so,
I mean,
we had over 130 people sign up,
yeah,
for the Pete's $1 million bracket challenge.
And it's weird how the rankings work, because I currently have 60 points.
Okay.
That says I'm in 31st, but I'm not going to sit here and count how many other people also have 60 points. So I could be anywhere from 31st to 100th for all I know, you know what I mean?
You.
So it's somewhere in there, but I'm at 60 points. You, my friend, though, still sitting atop not just the 103.7 leaderboard, but the entire leaderboard altogether. You are in first place, my friend, with 95 points. You are being chased, though, by quite a few people, listeners nipping at your heels there with 92 and 93 points.
They're gunning for me. They're gunning for me.
Second place, Taryn O with 93 points right there on your heels. Cole D, Paula L, and Craig D all with 92 points right behind you as well. So it's not over by any stretch.
No.
But, yeah, you have kind of ran away with the 103.7 leaderboard, if you will, I suppose. I am in dead last on that.
Well, the reason why is very simple. My national champion is a team that most people pick to lose.
Right, right.
And that was, I picked Sparty. I picked Michigan State to not only upset Duke, but I picked Michigan State to go to the national championship game and win. What I took a hit was, on the other side of the bracket, I picked Tennessee and North Carolina to be in my Final Four. Well, Tennessee and North Carolina both lost in the Sweet 16. And I was like, oh, damn. I was like, there it goes. Here it comes. I patted myself on the back too much. I felt too good about it. I was feeling myself too much, Cody. That's what it was. And I was like, oh. But then I picked Michigan State, obviously, to upset Duke. And a lot of people understandably picked Duke, especially with how Coach K has owned Tom Izzo.
You see, I'm looking through.
But
these.
I also picked Texas Tech to make it to the Final Four.
And I'm looking through these brackets, and like the people that follow right behind you, they have two out of four Final Four teams, the same as you do, but then their finals are Duke, North Carolina. So I don't know if they can even catch you, because their finals, both of the teams are already eliminated.
Oh.
They can't get a single team in their final game. So I don't know how the points work out, but so far, let's see here. Paula, her bracket has Michigan State against Virginia in the finals.
Oh,
so that's still, and she has Virginia against Auburn in the finals. So she's got three out of the four Final Four.
Paula's coming.
In the crosshairs, brother.
Paula's bringing the hot fire.
You're in the crosshairs for Paula.
Oh, I'm gonna go down to Paula.
She's got Virginia winning the whole darn thing. I apologize if Paula is a guy. It's 2019. You can do whatever you want, I know, but I assume this is a ladies' bracket.
Now, I definitely now have to have Michigan State get to the championship game, because Paula has
them getting there.
Right. Not only does she have Michigan State getting there, but she has a team. I don't have either team on the other side of the bracket.
Right. And she's got Virginia winning the whole thing. And
yeah.
You have Michigan State, right?
Yeah, I have Michigan State winning.
So you really need them. So that's basically what it could come down to there. That's interesting.
Nice.
Interesting indeed.
Nice. Big
so
up.
It ain't over at the top of the leaderboard.
No. And Paula, I know you're out there. Maybe you're listening.
Paula L.,
I know you're gunning for me. It's understandable. I'm not going to hold it against you. I mean, when you're in the bracket challenge, the Pete's bracket challenge, you got to be that way. You understand what I'm saying? I know for a lot of folks, the narrative is going to be, well, this Final Four is going to lack all the blue bloods, and the ratings are going to take a hit. And, you know, you don't have Duke, you don't have Kansas, you don't have North Carolina, you don't have Kentucky, you don't have the biggest name in college basketball in Zion Williamson or the second biggest name in Ja Morant, who was eliminated in the second round. I get all that. But if you're telling me that this is not going to be an entertaining as hell Final Four, then you don't really watch college basketball and you don't appreciate college basketball. The storylines alone make this interesting. We'll dive in more about the actual matchups as the week progresses here on the Rap Game with RP3. But once again, Texas Tech and Auburn are making their first appearances ever. Those storylines write themselves. Do you realize how hard it is to recruit anyone to go to Texas Tech? Or for that matter, live and stay in West Texas? Have you spent time in West Texas? Have you even remotely spent any time in Lubbock? Not exactly a destination, okay? It's just not. But for Chris Baird, 3 seasons at Texas Tech, this is a guy that coached Little Rock, Cody. You remember, this is the same guy who coached Little Rock to the NCAA tournament, and they got an upset win. This is a longtime Bob Knight assistant at Texas Tech. His name is being mentioned in every big-name job. UCLA, Texas A&M, Arkansas, they're all circling this guy as the guy to be the next head coach. I don't know if he leaves. He gets Texas Tech to the Final Four. Why in the hell would he take over a dumpster fire that is the Bruins of UCLA or Texas A&M now? You got Chris Baird making his first appearance. He's got Texas Tech to their first ever Final Four. I already talked about Bruce Pearl and the dump truck full of baggage that he comes with and possible NCAA sanctions that are coming down the pipe for him. In Auburn in there with the way they shoot the three-pointer. It's going to be fascinating watching them and how they shoot that up-pace offense with the three-point shot against Virginia's defense. And then Virginia, the redemption story from last year of being eliminated, embarrassed, being the first one seed to lose to a 16. Oh, and then there's Tom Izzo, Michigan State, the machine. Once again, one of the greatest coaches in the history of the game, getting back there, finally ending his drought of not making it to a Final Four. All intriguing, fascinating. Can't wait to watch them this Saturday. When we come back here on the Rap Game with RP3, LSU's not there. We'll dive in why right here on 103.7 The Game.
They threw the first punch, and we were able to cut it to, not really cut it, but we were able to keep it within striking distance. And in the second half, we were able to cut it even more and make it a game, and then, you know, they threw that haymaker, and
we fought a lot this year, you know with everything that's going on, and no one ever thought we was going to beat in 2016, so, you know, credit to that, but, you know, this is disappointing that this is the way it ended. And I feel like we definitely had the talent to win the game, but today was our day. We didn't come out with the right intensity from the start. They got a lead, and then after that, it was tough to get back and close the deficit.
Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Pars III, here on 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Those words you heard were uttered from two of the LSU Tigers' best players, guard Skylar Mays, and power forward, big man that does all the dirty work, Cavell Bigby Williams. LSU's run in the NCAA tournament ended in a lopsided loss to the Michigan State Spartans in the Sweet 16. And this is all you need to know about that game. LSU's interim coach Tony Benford had to call his first timeout before his team even scored. Like, before his team even made a bucket, he had to call timeout. The Spartans were up 8-0 before that timeout. And give LSU credit, they were able to kind of cut it down within 4 points a few times there in the second half. But it was never in doubt. It just wasn't. Sparty was the far better team, and they showed it there on Friday evening. This is not to take away from LSU's tremendous season. Regular season Southeastern Conference Championship. Their first in a decade. Ranked in the national polls in the top 10. Had Tremont Waters make all-SEC first team, co-defensive player of the year. Naz Reid, freshman recognition. Skylar Mays, recognized scholar athlete. And this is also a huge credit to LSU for making it this far with expectations which were quite low to begin the season. They were not projected to even remotely come close to winning the SEC. To have one of the best seasons in 10 years for the LSU men's basketball program, to be nationally ranked, to be nationally relevant, to have the PMAC sell out and make it the Def Dome again, all tremendous. And, of course, you had the Will Wade situation as well, which is not as tremendous. But as talented as LSU has been, and they've had some up-and-down games. Hell, they had up-and-down games in the first two rounds against Yale and then against Maryland, where they had those lulls, and they let both of those teams come back on them and push them. And we've talked about how they play down to the competition. And we've talked about ad nauseum, not only on this show but on this station, about how this team likes to play down to the competition and play up to the competition. And we saw how they played up when they were the underdog and they could have a chip on their shoulder throughout this season. At Ole Miss on the road when Ole Miss was a nationally ranked program. On the road at Kentucky where they pulled off the upset win. At home against Tennessee. But that chip on the shoulder, underdog mentality, us against the world, none of that mattered on Friday, man. Michigan State was clearly the better coach team. Michigan State was clearly the better team. Their players played better. I hate to say it like that, and this is not to dump on those guys, but you heard Skylar Mays talk about it. They punched him in the mouth, and that was it. LSU tried to fight back. But that Sparty team came out focused, determined. Michigan State had the bigger chip on their shoulder.
I mean, Michigan State had a freshman come out and score a career high. He was near his career high at the end of the first half. I mean, they couldn't miss. They had guys that had hit, I believe he said, I heard 5 3-pointers all season, and they drilled like 2 or 3 in the game against LSU. I mean, it's just, it's what happens when you come up against a team that just won't lose.
Tom Izzo did not call a timeout. Did not call a timeout, Cody.
In the whole game?
I believe in the whole game he did not call a timeout.
Sounds right.
Okay, 80-63 was the final, and I just, when you watch the game, and they started off on that 8-0 start, and I was like, oh. Sparty pushed the lead up to 17 points. And LSU had cut it down to a 4-point game when Big B Williams had a slam dunk there in the second half. But Sparty had Gabe Brown. You mentioned him, Cody. Career night with the 15 points. He comes up big with that 3-pointer, makes it once again a 7-point lead, and then Cassius Winston. LSU had no answer for Cassius Winston. 17 points, 8 assists. That's who Tremont Waters was supposed to contain. Tremont Waters did not contain him. Winston owned him in that game, okay? I like Tremont. I like his style of play. turns over the ball too much, but he's a good player. Hell, first team all SEC, right? Winston was not having any of him. He's like, no, you're not on my level. Sorry. I understand you play in the SEC. That's fine. I play for Tom Izzo. Not only was Winston a beast, Aaron Henry, another freshman. You remember the freshman who got yelled at by Tom Izzo that the national media was up in arms about? You can't yell at players like that. And he said, that's okay. Coach is supposed to yell at me. I screwed up. And people were like, what? He's okay with this? What? Yeah. Tom Izzo's bunch is okay with being yelled at. They're in the Final Four, by the way. Aaron Henry, who got yelled at by Tom Izzo and everyone made a big deal about, he stepped up with a big three-pointer as well. He also finished the game with 20 points. Would Will Wade have made a difference? I'll answer that for you very quickly. You can give us a call on the Arco Equipment Hotline if you want to give your thoughts about LSU's loss to Michigan State in the Sweet 16, 337-706-0111. I'll give you my thoughts real quickly. Would have Will Wade made a difference in this game? Absolutely not. Tom Izzo is on one level. Will Wade is on a completely different. They're not on the same level. Tom Izzo is a national championship winning coach with multiple Final Fours and 10 Elite Eight appearances on his resume at Michigan State. His program is a well-oiled machine. Will Wade maybe come up with some game plans and maybe helped cut the lead a little bit here and there? True. Maybe. Instead of 80-63, maybe it's 80-70 final. Regardless if LSU had Will Wade or not, it was abundantly clear from the start of the game to the finish of the game that they were not on the same level as Michigan State. And we know how good Michigan State is. Here's the thing that everyone forgets about Sparty. They were not only the regular season Big Ten champion, they were also the Big Ten tournament champion. They won their league twice. And they just vanquished Duke, the number one overall seed for the entire tournament. And now they're in the Final Four. Cody, does that make you feel any better whatsoever that the team that you lost to beat Duke and is now in the Final Four?
Yeah, sure, I guess. I mean,
how does that work? Look, my school's not good enough in basketball for me to be able to understand this concept of the NCAA tournament.
Let me
start there. I was like,
well, this is new territory for LSU basketball
fans as well. Yeah,
at least for me specifically. I mean, I watched, you know, Tyrus Thomas and those guys, Big Baby, they had a good year, but I mean, this is definitely out of the ordinary for sure. It all depends when you ask that question, you know, does it make it feel a little bit better knowing you lost to the eventual national champion? And I guess I'm going to say yes, because take back when LSU baseball lost to Coastal Carolina and we lost our mind. What just happened? Who did we lose? Who is this team? They're the
Chanticleers.
Yeah.
Great.
What is going on? And then they go on and they win the whole damn thing. It makes you feel a little bit better. Okay. You know what? They just weren't going to lose. And that's kind of how I feel about Michigan State right now. If Michigan State loses in the Final Four, though, I don't feel any worse, but I don't feel any worse. So it's one of those weird things. If Michigan State wins, it's like, hey, yeah, all right. But if Michigan State loses, then it's still like, I mean, LSU still lost. What difference does it make at this? So, I mean,
fair point. It's a fair point.
I guess I'm all right with it. And it's also specifics, too, because take the Saints, them losing, not getting to the Super Bowl. I did not want to see the Rams win that game. It would not have made me feel better to see the Rams win the Super Bowl. But it would make me feel better to see Coastal Carolina win the College World Series or Michigan State. So it's a game by game, case by case.
As an LSU fan, though, with a lot of the talk going on that they matched up better with Duke than they did Michigan State. Do you feel, as an LSU fan, if he just could have found a way to get past Michigan State, it would be you in the Final Four? Because
I can't say that with a great amount of confidence. I mean,
because of how lopsided the loss was to Michigan State.
And it's hard to dissect that portion of it out, knowing that LSU got beat by 20-plus points or whatever. It's hard to take that and put it and isolate it away and then try to decide what I think LSU would have done against Duke, because knowing what I know, I think LSU loses by 40 to Duke. So I don't know.
And there were some positives. Look, I said how Tremont Waters was owned by Cassius Winston. You know, Waters scored 23 points, right?
I mean, if he went one-on-one with somebody, he was getting to the rack.
Correct.
It was just, and Cavell started the game slow. Even the announcers were kind of not calling him out, but making a point of it. He wasn't finishing very strong.
Nas Reed did not have he was sluggish to start off with. Look, Waters got his, but for a guy who was named the co-defensive player of the year and first team all SEC defense,
yeah,
was his defense great in the NCAA tournament, in particular against Michigan State?
No,
it wasn't. So, look, now the hard part comes for the Tigers. And we'll talk more about this later with our friend Jarrett Rozier when he joins us from Tiger Details in the second hour. Where do they go from here? Is Will Wade still the head coach? Is Tony Benford even an assistant? Or is he going to be promoted to the head coach? Is anyone on this staff going to be around? What did Javonte Smart said afterwards? I'll probably be around.
And I mean, we had Amy Just tell us last week that don't be surprised if they clean house with the coaching staff, Benford included, just because.
The complete coaching staff could be cleared out. They could all get pink slips. You could see Javonte Smart transfer out. You could see Nas Reed declare for the NBA draft. Cavell Bigby Williams is a senior. That's going to leave poor Skylar Mays, who wants to be a doctor anyway, the only one on the team. I love watching that kid play, by the way. Tremendous, tremendous guy on and off the court. But a lot of question marks now for LSU. They're running the tournament. It's come to an end. Hey, look, reaching the Sweet 16, winning the regular season SEC championship and advancing to the Sweet 16, that's a banner. You understand what I'm saying?
For that, you get two claps and a Ric Flair. Woo!
Yes, yes. But I know LSU fans may be disappointed. But, you know, I think the sting is going to be, yes, we had this great year, got the regular season championship, got to the Sweet 16, but, oh, yeah, now we also have the stigma of what's going to happen in our program, possibly be set back for 3 to 4 to 5 years based on what's going to occur with the university's own investigation or the NCAA and the lawsuits and everything that will happen from the fallout of that. When we come back here, we'll close out the first hour of the Rap Game with RP3, talking a little New Orleans Pelicans. That's not a positive way to end the hour, but I'll try to find a silver lining about talking about the New Orleans Pelicans here on 103.7 The Game.
He dribbles down the middle, kick it to Bullock, three-pointer by Bullock, and the Lakers all of a sudden can't miss.
Shooting 13 of 31, 42% from three.
Wish they should have bottled some of this up. They now lead by 30. Wow.
Well, here's one positive thing. They didn't win by 30. The Lakers didn't win by 30.
But Ray, it's okay, right? Because the Lakers, they have LeBron James, right? Don't they have the best player in the world on their team? That's why they beat the Pels by 30, right? LeBron James.
First of all, only beat him by 28. So, okay. Once again, silver lining.
But still, LeBron James, right? He's on the other
team. LeBron James did not play.
Oh, no.
No. They didn't even have LeBron James out there who was shut down for the rest of the year.
The sarcasm this morning.
Yes, 130 to 102 loss for the Pels.
Hey, they got 100.
I've been trying to be positive about the Pels all season long, Cody Schutz, on this show. The Rap Game with RP3.
And I have turned off my mic and laughed at you every time.
And I'm watching a little bit of the game last night because that's my team, right? I didn't grow up, you know, we didn't grow up with an NBA. Well, you didn't grow up with an NBA team. You know, I wasn't going to root for the Hawks growing up as a kid. I mean, I liked Dominique. I mean, we all kind of rooted for the Bulls because we loved Jordan. But, you know, I grew up in an era where, you know, Showtime Lakers, Larry Bird and the Boston Celtics, Michael Jordan the Bulls, the Bad Boy Pistons. You know, Trailblazers were really good with Clyde Drexler, and then the Rockets with Akeem. So I loved the stars. I always loved the stars about the NBA. So, but if I have to ride with someone, my team is the Pels. Okay? They got Pierre the Pelican. They got the King Cake Baby. They got the two creepiest, just haunt your dreams mascots in the NBA. I'm down with the Pels, right? And I've been trying to be Mr. Positivity about the Pels. I've been telling you, the listener, you know what? Yeah. Dale Demps being fired is actually a good thing. And I still stand by that, by the way. You need someone else in there to handle this offseason. We focused in on the Elfrid Payton's triple-double streak, 5, that he had this year. The Anthony Davis drama. But, man, to get absolutely curb stomped by the Lakers, who don't even have LeBron James playing.
And for the record, they've shut LeBron down for the season. He's done. He will no longer play against anyone.
Here, once again, we love playing this game, don't we? None of the other, like, you think of the Lakers' young core, Lonzo Ball, Kyle Kuzman, right? They didn't even play. Ball's been out injured.
So the Pels lost to the Lakers' G League team.
JaVale McGee. JaVale McGee.
And Reggie Bullock.
JaVale McGee had 23 points and 16 rebounds. JaVale McGee hasn't put up those numbers since high school. He was like, yeah, I'm going to get a bonus for my – that I'm sure ensured he got some type of bonus this year.
Yeah, all of a sudden basketball's fun again.
23 and 16. Cadell Pope had 19 points. Your boy Bullock had 18.
Attaboy, Reggie.
A guy named Caruso, who's not related to David, I wear my sunglasses inside on CSI Miami, David.
Charlie Caruso, she does backstage interviews on WWE, maybe related there.
This cat had 23 points. I have no idea who he is. There's a guy named Muscala who had 10. The Lakers had 6 players score in double figures, and you know who led them? The guy the Pels let walk in the offseason, Rajon Rondo. Mm. 24 points and 12 dimes for Rondo.
Rondo's that type of guy, though, that will come back and burn a team that, like, he used
to play
for.
Oh, he's so petty.
He is that kind of guy.
He's just that cat. Who led the Pels? Doesn't matter. They had 6 players scoring double figures. That's good, right? Julius Randle led the team with 17 points. Okafor, 15. Wood, 15. He had a double-double, his first career double-double. Solomon Hill gets 14 points. I saw tweets about his not having a beach body or a body ready for beach season.
Dad bods are in.
But the best thing about what occurred last night with the 28-point loss for the New Orleans Pelicans is this, ladies and gentlemen.
There's only 4 games left.
Our boy, our friend, Andrew Lopez, Lope himself from NOLO.com, Time Speaking Union, tweeted out the final score of the game last night and said afterwards, 4 more.
Oh, that is your silver lining.
That's your silver lining. The Pels only have 4 more games in this tremendously terrible season. That's your silver lining. You're welcome. That's going to do it for the first hour of the Rap Game with RP3. When we come back, we're going to talk some Houston Astros baseball. They lost 3 of 4 to the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. What the hell? Oh, Rap Game, RP3, right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local from the
1037 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. We are Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't Step Lunch Locker.
It's Rep Game with RP3. Raymond Parch III.
One of God's own prototypes. High-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it. Yeah, we have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rep Game with RP3 on 1037 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Welcome to the second hour of the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parse III, here on 1037 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. The man, the myth, the legend, the man rocking the Saints beanie today, Cody Schutz, is manning the ones and twos like always. Tremendous first hour in the books, my friend. Good job.
Thank you. I waited an entire hour to say this to you, so you're welcome for that. But to each and every person tuned in to the Rap Game right now, I want to wish a genuine and just most fervorish happy WrestleMania week to each and every one of you.
Bravo. Bravo.
This sir. Sunday, the show of shows, the grandest stage of them all will happen, WrestleMania. And I am excited. Live from MetLife as well. So that's going to be awesome. I love when WrestleMania is in a stadium.
We don't have time for me to go onto a side rant about the corporate sponsorship of stadiums.
Oh, well, no, I just, yeah.
We will. Trust me.
WrestleMania, just a few years ago, was in Camping World Stadium. So, there you go.
Just.
Long gone are the days of WrestleMania being held in Trump Plaza. Fun fact, WrestleMania 3, Trump Plaza.
Trump Plaza, very, very, very true. Very true. Bravo,
sir. The President of the United States is a WWE Hall of Famer.
That's correct.
These are facts.
This is the world.
He's also taken a Stone Cold Stunner, and he has shaved Vince McMahon's head. These are things our president has done. I'm about it. I don't know. It's cool to me, if you ask me. I mean, if The Rock is going to be president one day, this is the perfect... Like,
oh, I can't wait for The Rock to be president.
He's going to run. I don't know if he'll win, but he's going to run.
He's still got a couple big paycheck movies in.
Yeah, Disney's not going to cut him loose.
Yeah, he's going to get cut loose. Wait till he gets a little pudgy and a little bit older, and then he'll run.
It is WrestleMania week, so we'll sprinkle in a few things. But
have
Friday,
you made the plans
maybe.
Yet for Sunday?
I mean, my plans are at my house doing my, like, there'll be a spread of food. I mean, if you want to do something, we maybe could do something. I don't have big plans yet, so.
Nice.
If you want to watch Mania, we can make that happen.
Nice. We'll table that for later.
We will, absolutely.
And we'll talk more about WrestleMania week as we will bring on our good friend Brady Amon later in the week on Thursday.
I think we should.
For some old school wrestling talk, a WrestleMania edition.
Yeah, and I'm thinking Friday, since it'll be going into WrestleMania weekend, I'm thinking RPOs may have a bit of a WrestleMania flair. We'll see. We got a long way to go.
That's what we call the long tease. So, Astros, though. We talked about them on Friday's show, right, Cody? We talked about how tremendous a start of the season it was, even though I railed about the fact that they had to open up on the road against the dumpster that is Tropicana Field there in Tampa Bay. Verlander goes out, pitches like the ace that he is. Gets the win, starts things off on the right foot. Springer had a Springer dinger. Altuve had a home run. Brantley had a home run. I was like, hey, look at this. And then what did the Astros do? They lose three straight after that. They dropped, not only did they drop the series at Tampa Bay, they dropped it in exquisite fashion, losing three of their final four games in the set. So what do we take away from this? Opening up the season, dropping three of their first four games. Well, if you follow the Astros, they're typically bad at the Trop. And to be fair to the artist formerly known as the Devil Rays, they did win 90 games last year, right? So it's not like they're scrubs, even though they have no business hosting an opening day series. If you take away that first game, though, the offense struggled for the Astros. They scored 9 runs in those in that 4-game series. 7 came courtesy of the long ball. They barely had any extra base hits that extended innings, anything like that. Also, to be fair, they had never faced Charlie Morton or Tyler Glasnow. The pitching staff that they faced over the weekend on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. They had faced Blake Snell twice last year, and that's who they teed off on Thursday. So, you know, a little familiarity, that's going to play a role in this as well. Bregman, Altuve, and Springer. They finished the series 8-34. Each one of them hit a home run in the 4-game series, but the rest of their hits were all singles. Bregman himself finished the series. Our boy Alex, former LSU star, was 1-15. Quote, this is what Breggs had to say. We just have to put together a little better quality of at-bat, especially myself. My at-bats have been horrible. I do like Bregman in that regard. He is all about accountability, right? When he is awful, he's going to tell you so. He's not going to shy away from it. He's going to say, you know what? I sucked. I got to get better. I like that. It's the type of guy I want on my team. The Astros also had problems on the base paths. They attempted 5 stolen bases in the 4-game series. And 4 of them were unsuccessful. So not only did they not get extra base hits, and they struggled at the plate, when they did get runners on, they struggled at stealing bases. Cody, last time I checked, you do have an extensive amount of, I want to say, officiating baseball.
Softball, but...
Softball. So you're familiar with being on the diamond.
Correct.
Yes.
And having to pay close attention.
Yes, pay close attention. If your team can't get extra base hits,
mm-hmm.
and when they do get on base,
mm-hmm.
they're getting thrown out while trying to steal bases.
Correct.
That is a recipe for what?
For not scoring.
Yes.
That is a... And you know what? I know you didn't ask this, but it's that whole situation is counterintuitive, right? Because you're not getting extra base hits. So you tend to, all right, let's try to make something happen, which is what you hear. All right, let's make something happen. If we can't, you know, get it to work for us, let's manufacture a run. All right, you get a guy on first, you steal second. Now he's there. But at what point do you start calling off the dogs, so to speak, when it comes to trying to take that extra base? I mean, it's tough for a manager. I like to see them taking chances. I'd rather lose a game by 2 or 3 runs where we attempted to get into scoring position late in the game when we weren't hitting the ball well and got thrown out, as opposed to, you know, sitting there and expecting something to go different when the entire game it hasn't. So, but
yeah,
regardless,
I'm not going to bag on AJ for that, right?
Right.
He's a tremendous skipper.
A phenomenal skipper, some would say.
You have to get something going, right? So if you're struggling at the plate, when you do get a guy on, you want to be aggressive to try to get guys in scoring position.
Right.
So you can get that bloop single and bring in someone, right, and try to scrap your way into it. I get that. Once again, I've always said this. The manager can only do so much. Like, the manager's not the one out there running the base paths. Right. The manager's not the one out there trying to field fly balls.
Here's a great example of what you're saying. Not. The manager, look at LSU, because their season's been going on a lot longer now. LSU was not touching the ball at all going into Friday's game. Didn't hit the ball, played poorly. That Palmieri can't do anything about that. What Palmieri can do is put C.J. Willis in the lineup and put Chris Reed back in the lineup. And then those guys, they come through. Now, it's still Palmieri could have put those guys in the lineup and they could still not have performed. And it's still on the players. But your manager can set your lineup, get the right guys in there. But to what you're saying, those guys still have to use their talents and make a play.
The manager can't play for them. They have to be the one to execute what the coach gives them. You know,
I mean, is a 1-3 start for the Houston Astros, is that a problem?
This is baseball.
Exactly.
No. No. You still got Verlander. He still is phenomenal. You still have, do you really think that Altuve and Bregman and Springer aren't going to all of a sudden figure out how to hit the ball?
Right.
No. No. Maybe they were just like, we hate Tropicana as well. We can't wait to get out of here. I don't know. I'm not concerned. Talk to me in a month, and if the Astros are still struggling at the plate and whatnot, we'll see.
Because that's the biggest thing is at the plate. Because when you look at, after they won the season opener, Gerrit Cole, Bebe starts the second game, goes six strong, gives up five hits, one run, and 10 strikeouts. I'll take that. I'll take that all day. One run, 10 strikeouts in six innings?
Yes.
That's great. And then you go to look over at game three, Colin McHugh, five innings. He gives up two runs, but he has 9 strikeouts. I mean, the pitching was not bad at all. I mean, you look in the final game of the series, Wade Miley, 6 innings. 3 earned runs, 4 strikeouts. That was your weakest pitching performance, and you still got a guy that got a quote-unquote quality start. He went 6 innings and gave up 3 runs or less.
Correct. I mean, the starting pitching was there. They did their job. They are striking out batters. The problem was that the bats were dreadful. The lineup did not come up with extra base hits. Look, if you don't get extra base hits and then you get caught stealing, you're going to lose every game. And that's what happened to the Stros. But it is a very long season. But the Astros will have a chance to get back on track tonight. They continue their season opening road trip. They'll be at arch rival, nemesis, or nemesis, however you would like to say that, the Texas Rangers.
It's the Longhorn series, the Lone Star series, excuse me.
Astros at Rangers. You can listen to that live tonight on our sister station, The Rewind, 97.7 FM, 1330 AM, Lafayette. First pitch, 7:05. So let's see if the Astros can get things on track tonight against the Texas Rangers there at the ballpark at Arlington. I'm sure it's called something else. I'm sure there's some type of corporate sponsorship attached.
The ballpark at Arlington, sponsored by Dr. Scholes.
No.
I don't know what it is. I wonder.
Hopefully the Astros can get things back on track tonight in Arlington. When we come back, we'll talk about a team that did get things back on track this past weekend, the LSU Tigers. They dropped the opener, looked like the sky was falling, but they rebounded in a convincing fashion, taking the series against number 2 Mississippi State on the road in Stark Vegas.
Fun fact, it is no longer called the ballpark at Arlington. It is called Globe Life Park in Arlington.
Oh, I sense my rant of the week is already developing. It's already developing. Globe Life Park? Are you kidding
me? Globe Life Park in Arlington.
You know, when you think of baseball history, what do you think? Oh, you think of Ebbets Field. It wasn't Ebbets Field presented by Wrigley Chewing Gum / Tobacco. Okay? Okay? Yankee Stadium doesn't have a corporate name to it. It's freaking Yankee Stadium. Fenway Park? Wrigley Field?
Wrigley is gum.
But
it's his name.
But it's his name.
It's his name. It's the guy's name. Ricketts. Now it's not his name anymore, but...
Oh, I already have my rant of the week lined up. It's Monday. That's not a good sign. When we come back, we'll talk about LSU baseball getting back on track right here on The Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game.
One ball, two strikes, two outs here to Antoine Duplantis. The pitch coming up from Brandon Smith, the right-hander, and that's hit deep in the right field. Going back, it's a two home run day for Antoine Duplantis.
Well, I think Lafayette High's own Antoine Duplantis got out of that slump over the weekend with a two home run game. That was our friend Jeff Palermo, co-host of Tiger Rag Radio. He was on the call for the LSU baseball team's series in Stark, Vegas. It started off poorly, right? Zach Hess got roughed up in the opener on Thursday. And it was like, oh, that players only meeting didn't work. This team has now lost four straight. What the hell's going on with the LSU baseball team? And then Friday occurred, and then Saturday occurred. And here on Monday morning, LSU took 2 of 3 from the team ranked number 2 in the country and has been re-energized. I want to focus on Sunday to start off with. The traditional Sunday game, the Saturday
game. That's going to happen a couple times.
I know. It always throws me off when they play early. Been waiting on Eric Walker, right? Coming off the injury, Cody. He has not looked sharp or as sharp as you would hope he would be. Well, the sophomore righty. The only thing he did on Saturday, he just threw 7 shutout innings. That's it. Antoine Duplantis, as we talked about, he hit his 2 solo home runs as they rolled the Dogs 11-2. Saturday afternoon at Duty Noble Field. I literally had to force myself to even say that. Like, it's just, I was like, really? Who? I understand it was the man. I understand it was a name. Okay. But
right.
Stop. With the win, LSU's now 19-9 on the year and 6-3 in Southeastern play and has likely ended its skid in the polls. I would see them have a big bounce back. Bounce back in the polls when the polls are released later today here. Here's the thing about this, and we talked about this last week, Cody. Mississippi State's a very good program. There's a lot of saltiness between the two. Skip Bertman and all those guys that played for Skip used to love throwing shade at Mississippi State's way back in the day, in the 80s and throughout the 90s.
Right.
LSU has now won 13 of his last 14 regular season series against Mississippi State and 12 of the last 13 season series against the Bulldogs under head coach Paul Maneri. Maneri has owned them.
But I believe the word you're looking for is domination.
Yeah. They've dominated Mississippi State. And the win also secured the first SEC Road Series win for the Tigers since
thank God.
May of 2017. Once again, first road series win in SEC play for the LSU baseball team since 2017.
You know, the basketball team hadn't won a road game in over a year.
Yeah.
And they had a hell of a season.
Yeah.
So.
The Tigers will, of course, return to action Tuesday night against Grambling State, 6:30 p.m.
It's a multiple midweek game week. They have two that make up from that South Alabama rain out.
That's Wednesday night.
Yeah,
right?
I believe that's going to be made up. So it's a maybe that's a good thing, though, when your team starts to play well, especially in baseball, right? When the team starts to play well, you want to be on the field. You don't want to take, you know, it's the worst thing in the world, in my opinion, is in like Major League Baseball when your team has won 8 out of 10 or 13 out of 15 or something like that, and you hit the all-star break. It's like, no, we want to keep playing. We want to go, go, go. Maybe now LSU is hitting their stride. They're starting to play, you know, very good, very well, and maybe they can continue a couple of midweek games so they don't fall off and then back into the weekend. I don't know. I like two midweek games this week.
I do too, especially with them having played early, right? They didn't play on Sunday. They wrapped up the series on Saturday, so they can squeeze in the two midweek games. You can still give some of your younger pitchers, maybe you give Landon Marceau a crack at it, try to get his confidence back.
Right.
They should destroy Grambling in South Alabama. Okay, but you have to have the reservations based on how they've performed in other midweek contests. Right.
And this is baseball, and baseball is a very fickle sport.
It's a fickle mistress.
It is.
It's a fickle mistress. Hey, just a reminder, tonight, the Paul Maneri Show. I wonder if they'll be asked about Antoine Duplantis' home runs and Walker's pitching. I bet you he talks about it. The Paul Maneri Show. You can listen to it live right here tonight on 103.7 The Game at 7 o'clock. So, you know, you just keep it local with us. Jordy Holberg from 2 to 4. The good brother, Ben Love, from 4 to 7. That's right. You're going to get the full 3 hours of Ben Love today, ladies and gentlemen, on Bumper to Bumper Sports. That's a good thing. Then after that, the good brother, Ben Love, is going to lead us right into the Paul Maneri Show live at 7 o'clock right here on 103.7 The Game. When we come back, we'll talk a little baseball, but we'll put a bow on the LSU men's basketball season with our good friend Jarrett Rozier of Tiger Details right here on 103.7 The Game.
Bigby Williams shot rattles out.
Nice.
It's a fake. Baseline shot, turns it down, goes to Winston for a three. First eight of the game to the Spartans.
The ability, the open floor. Big Ten play of the year with a little early nylon.
Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsa III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're going to head out to the Arco Equipment Hotline. Welcome on our first guest of today's show. He covers the LSU football team, basketball team, and everything else there at Tiger Details. But more importantly, it's our boy's birthday today, and he survived his birthday weekend because my man, our next guest here, he doesn't just celebrate one day. No. He makes it an event. It's like it's like a Lollapalooza. It's like a festival lineup for our boy. It's time to welcome on Jarrett Rozier.
Happy birthday today. Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday,
wow,
brother.
Dude, I appreciate that. I appreciate that quite a bit.
Not a problem, man. How you feeling, man? I know you enjoyed yourself this weekend. Did you enjoy yourself a little too much?
Maybe a little bit on Friday. Kind of coasted through Saturday, and then yesterday was really just kind of a little bit more low-key. My brother and I had some crawfish and some stuff like that, just kind of easing into the new week. But it was a great weekend as always, man. Just feel fortunate to have Ethan's close friends. I think a lot of people know Amos Morrell. His younger brother Benji and I always do our birthdays together. And so we've got Benji's coming up here in a few weeks on Easter weekend. Great group of friends that always is together to support one another through everything, and then certainly celebrate those happy occasions like this weekend or Benji's in a couple weeks. So I can't say thanks enough to all of y'all.
Well, Jarrett, I appreciate you coming on your actual birthday, and congratulations and happy birthday to you, man. So let's start things off with what occurred there in the nation's capital on Friday. Your initial thoughts for me, Michigan State was just a better team. And I think it just boiled down to simply being that LSU faced a team that had a better coach and had better players, and that they were just a better team overall. What were your initial thoughts on that 80-63 loss in the Sweet 16 against Michigan State?
Yeah, Michigan State really just, and I mean, you saw it continue into yesterday against Duke. They're playing, and not to knock the basketball they've played all year long, because they've been a great team all year long, but they're playing their best basketball right now. And, you know, I think if you have LSU and Michigan State play a series, I don't think Michigan State's sweeping the thing by any means, but I certainly think that right now, the way those two teams are playing, that Michigan State, as you mentioned, was the better team. They came out and looked like they were going to be trouble for LSU very quickly in that game. And, I mean, LSU made its push there after halftime, but a lot of times when you dig yourself that type of a hole, it's just tough to sustain the amount of momentum and success to overcome it and then hold on to it. And they never could really get completely over that hill. Michigan State came back and answered. We talked, I think, a little bit last week. Michigan State is a good shooting basketball team, and LSU has had issues at times defending the perimeter shot, and you saw that hurt LSU at times. And even when Michigan State was off the mark, Michigan State's ability to get offensive rebounds and second chance opportunities was just a backbreaker to LSU's defense. And then on the flip side, Michigan State hasn't always been great at taking care of the basketball, and so you thought LSU was going to have to force some turnovers and get out in transition like the Tigers like to do. Turnovers were as much an Achilles heel of the Spartans as anything early in this tournament, and instead they took care of the basketball pretty well, only ended up with 7 turnovers on the game, and so just not a lot of opportunities for LSU to get out there, run, and get some easy baskets to answer.
Jared, you know, Tremont Waters was able to kind of attack and get his points, had 23. But defensively, LSU struggled, and they really had no answer for Cassius Winston, right? I mean, he was a huge difference in this game. And the other guys did, too. Some of their freshmen that Michigan State had stepped up big. Some of them came off the bench. But Cassius Winston kind of set the tone for Michigan State, and LSU never really had an answer for him.
Yeah, I was telling somebody late last week about Cassius Winston. As much as Trey has done for LSU all season, Cassius is kind of, you know, Michigan State's Trey, with just the way he's helped orchestrate what they have going and been a leader for a team that has some young guys that needed somebody that has played a little bit more basketball at the college level to just kind of, as people talk about with Tremont, be the head of the snake. And I think Cassius is that in a lot of ways for Michigan State, and was as frustrating as a lot of SEC coaches referred to defending Trey throughout conference play. I think LSU fans saw how frustrating it is to cover Cassius Winston on Friday night.
Talking with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com. Jarrett, do you believe at all that Will Wade would have made a difference in the end result here? Or do you still think Michigan State was just that much better of a team?
I mean, it certainly would have been beneficial for LSU to have Will Wade on Friday, and I mean, really through all the lead up to Friday, and to have not had to deal with some of those potential distractions that came along with that whole situation as the regular season wound down. But at the same time, it's tough to say that it would have made a 17-point difference in that game with the way Michigan State was playing. Some of those issues with some perimeter defense and things like that were just kind of issues that LSU had throughout the year, and then they ran into a great team that was able to exploit some of those things. So I think it would have been interesting to see LSU with its head coach in play and to see what difference that would have made. But it's tough to say definitively that it would have swung a game that was that one-sided for as much of it as Friday's was.
Jarrett, now that the season's in the books, and look, it's still an immensely successful season. There's going to be changes to the banners there inside the Pete Maravich Assembly Center, with a regular season championship going to be put up on the big board, and obviously a trip to the Sweet 16 as well. Tigers were ranked in the top 10 for a team that overcame so much. It's a tremendous season, but there's a ton of question marks around this team moving forward. What did you think of the comments by Javonte Smart afterwards, which it was kind of, he was very vague on whether or not he was returning or not?
Yeah, I think watching what happens with all those young players was always going to be interesting because of how talented a lot of the freshmen and then sophomore Tremont Waters were anyway. But with the amount of uncertainty right now, with everything that happened with Will Wade, and you know, the fact that any FBI and NCAA investigations in college basketball are just going to continue here, certainly over the next month, but I mean, really for the foreseeable future, I think that adds another interesting wrinkle to not know exactly what occurs with any of that, because you've got to think that some guys who, you know, maybe would have been a toss-up and maybe would have leaned to potentially come back, that it gets tougher to make that sort of a decision to do so if anything were to occur with regards to with any of that ongoing investigation, all the ongoing allegations. And, I mean, you obviously look at Javonte and you look at Nas. I mean, Tremont, depending on what things look like in Baton Rouge next year, if he feels like he's kind of proven himself as much as he can at the college level and sees that what's waiting for him if he returns isn't as attractive as was there to start this year, some of those decisions could be tough. And so that's going to be a major storyline on LSU's campus over these next couple months, because that's a really talented group, and a group that I think a lot of them, as talented as they are right now, as much potential as they have, could stand to improve their stock by coming back another year and rounding things out a little bit more. But when you have some of that additional uncertainty, that, you know, those extra curveballs in the mix, it just becomes that much more complicated of a decision.
Yeah, the deadline to withdraw your name for the NBA draft is June 11th, but the NCAA requires athletes to submit a written statement announcing that decision by May 30th, 10 days after the end of the NBA combine. So we still have a few months there, Jarrett, for that process to work out. Let me ask you this. If Will Wade does not come back, and let's have the scenario, let's say LSU and Will Wade part ways, he doesn't come back, but there's no violations from the NCAA. So there's no punishment, there's no stripping of scholarships, there's no postseason ban. What's the possibility, in your estimation, that Waters, Reed, and Smart all decide to come back and give us another run for next season?
I think it's possible. Just a lot of variables out there in terms of how quickly that is hashed out, and if they get a sense of who's coming in as the successor there. Is it Tony Benford? Is it someone else with the relationship and respect like there? How does some of the pre-draft grading go for those guys? Because that will certainly be a factor, as good as they've been for LSU this year. I don't know that Javonte and Nas have lived as high in the mock drafts as they maybe would have expected when they arrived to campus. And so seeing where they stack up once they actually get some actual NBA feedback of where they might slot in, paired with just who will be leading that program, I think they'd have to sit down and have some discussions, because, I mean, as much as has been criticized of Will Wade, particularly on a national scale late in the season, there's a lot of love and respect there for him amongst his players, and they really, you know, enjoy working with and playing with him. And so him being out of the mix is a pretty big blow, regardless of what the overall program situation is. And I mean, you see that with guys Anytime there's a coaching change, whether somebody leaves for a bigger job or gets fired, there's always some uncertainty because particularly in basketball, but really college sports all over the place, people build that attachment with the coach and the coaching staff, and that makes a major factor in where they're going to play. And so without him, if there are no other sanctions or anything along those lines, you know, there's certainly still some potential there going into next year, but it'll be something that they'll have to kind of struggle with a little bit to know that the guy that they came to play for and love to play for won't be in the mix. Because I know it's been a difficult couple of weeks in that regard, but it's going to be interesting with that aspect, but also where they stack up NBA potential wise this year.
Jarrett, we'll wrap it up with this real quick, brother. How quickly do you expect LSU, the university, the athletic department, Joe Oliva, to make a decision on whether or not Will Wade's going to be their coach moving forward?
I'm really unsure about that. Honestly, the way the suspension happened, I think some of the timing of that was kind of interesting. And so now that the season's done for them, you wonder if they make a quicker move. But at the same time, there is that April 22nd date where a lot more information with Christian Dawkins at the center, where that initial wiretap transcript leaked out from involving Will Wade in the first place. A lot more information should become available there. And at the same time, as much as we wait for that, all of what's occurred has been Will Wade tied to allegations against other people. Nothing has really come strong at Will Wade in the university yet. And so a lot of the backlash for the quick move on the suspension was why didn't LSU let this play out and find out more information? And so you wonder if they maybe wait and hold off until they get that much clearer of a picture, particularly if the conversations between Will and Joe Oliva still are minimal, if any.
Jared, brother, appreciate you giving us some insight as always. Happy birthday to you once again, my man. I hope you have a terrific day, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Ray. Appreciate you. Looking forward to it.
Jarrett Rozier, TigerDetails.com, breaking down LSU men's basketball. We will wrap up the second hour of the Wrap Game with RP3 with a little Raging Cajun softball talk right here after this break on 103.7 The Game. Hey, friends, it's still not late. It's still you haven't missed the deadline. If you want to take part in the 2019 Masters Tournament Challenge that we got up on the 103.7 The Game website, look, the only thing you have to do is go to our website, click on the link for the 2019 Masters Tournament Challenge, and you can enter yourself for a chance to win a $100 gift card from our friends at golfballs.com. Now, if you're like me and you go out there and it's a bit of a train wreck when you're on a golf course, you probably go through a box of balls at least every time you're on the course, if you're like me.
So $100 can do you some good is what you're saying.
I'm saying $100 can go a long way. Now, you know what I'm saying? It can go a long way. Trust me. Especially after you have a meltdown where you're then taking all the balls out of your bag and hitting them into the water because out of disgust.
The best shots you've hit all day are the angry swings.
Then the angry swings. There may be a club in there, too. Once again, I'm sharing a little too much. Look, go to the 103.7 The Game website. Click on the link for the 2019 Masters Tournament Challenge, like I said, for your chance to win a $100 gift card from golfballs.com. Look, it's easy. Sign up. Pick the golfer you think will win the 2019 Masters.
Who's getting the green jacket?
Who's going to get the green jacket? I always wonder, do they wash those? Are those getting dry cleaned?
I want the gold jacket from Happy Gilmore.
Oh, yes, you do. Yes, you do. If the winning golfer is selected by more than one entry, we will put all the correct entries in a raffle and then select a winner. So look, go to our website, click on the link, take part in the Masters Tournament Challenge. It's your chance to win a $100 gift card from golfballs.com. It's real easy. Take care of it. That's all. Briefly, I want to talk about the Raging Cajuns. Baseball team may have struggled over the weekend. We'll get more into that in the third hour, dropping a series on the road. The softball team, though, just keeps being the absolute machine that Jerry Glasgow has them right now. They got the series sweep at Georgia Southern, the 10th-ranked team in the country, the Raging Cajun softball team. Got the sweep, posted a 3-1 win on Sunday to take the sweep. And the Raging Cajuns are now 29-4 overall. They are a perfect 12-0 in Sun Belt Conference play. Sarah Huddick, she opened up the fourth inning with a solo homer. Keely Milligan, she had a bases-loaded single down the left field line that also brought in some runs. So they had it at the plate. But once again, look, Summer Ellison, phenomenal season. She picked up her nation-leading 20th victory of the season. She got to 20 wins before April.
That's what you call putting a little spin on the ball, if you want a softball term.
The former Turlings Catholic star retired 15 of 16 Eagles batters she faced from the second through sixth inning in yesterday's victory.
Easy mode.
The Raging Cajuns have now extended their road winning streak to 10 games and continued the program's best start to Sun Belt play since 2017 and have claimed their fourth series sweep in as many weekends. Once again, Keely Milligan, 2-for-2, 2 RBIs in Sunday's game. Kara Grimion started her 200th consecutive game. She also picked up 2 hits. And Alicia Dalton went 3-for-4 for her 5th multi-hit game in the past 2 weeks. She stretched her hitting streak to 9 games. Up next, well, the Raging Cajuns travel to Lake Charles for a rematch with I-10 neighbor McNeese, who beat them in Lamson Park. That'll be Wednesday. And then they'll come back home for a 3-game stand against UTA. So congratulations to the Raging Cajuns softball team. Second hour in the books. Third hour coming up. Jeff Palermo joins us right here on the Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't set for like locker.
It's Rap Game with RP3, Raymond Parts III.
One of God's own prototypes. High-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it. Yeah, we have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
And this one is lofted into the air, into left center field. Out his horse is Mangum. Still going. And he can't get to it. One hops the wall. Willis is around third. And there will be no throw to the plate, an RBI double, and a 9-game hitting streak for Giovanni DiGiacomo.
Well done, partner.
Welcome to the third and final hour of the Rap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can give us a call today on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. Our final hour is going to be jam-packed. We're going to be breaking down the Raging Cajuns baseball series on the road. We'll have our good friend George Faust joining us at 8:32 to talk about the Raging Cajuns baseball team and softball team. And just to come back and recap a little bit, we started off talking today's show about March Madness and what a tremendous Elite Eight it was, with the Virginia-Purdue game popping to mind. You had that terrific Auburn-Kentucky game, Duke-Michigan State. It was one of the best Elite Eights in years. Not only that, you know, I want to say it was the lowest margin of victory total in Elite Eight history. So they were all close games. They were all tremendous contests. We also gave a brief look ahead at this weekend's Final Four. Number five seed Auburn versus number one Virginia. Auburn making its first Final Four appearance in program history. Virginia making its first since 1984. And then number three Texas Tech making its first appearance. They'll be taking on Michigan State and Tom Izzo in the other Final Four matchup. We also talked about the LSU hoops season coming to an end, obviously, versus Michigan State. And then we also talked about LSU baseball taking two of three from the Fighting Cowbells there in Stark, Vegas, over the weekend, Thursday through Saturday series. Now we're going to head out to the Arco Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest. He was the man on the call there for the three-game series in Stark, Vegas, as LSU rebounded from the disappointing loss in the opener of the series to take two of three and to win the series. It's the co-host of Tiger Rad Radio, the one and only Jeff Palermo. Jeff, how are you this morning, brother?
Doing well, Raymond. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Let's start off with this, Jeff. Not a great start to the series. Zach Hess got roughed up on Thursday, yet this team responded big time with the bats and with the pitching performance, in particular with Walker on Saturday. You were there on the call. What did you think of how the Tigers responded after dropping that first game?
I thought it was really impressive because a lot of doom and gloom after the loss on Thursday. Even though the Tigers rallied, they were down by as many as five runs in that game at one point, or actually four runs, excuse me. And they rallied. They get three runs in the eighth, had a chance to get a runner in scoring position in the ninth. And got the last base run. I think it was Antoine Duplantis got caught stealing there in the ninth inning. And then on Friday, they go up against a pitcher, a freshman who was the number one pick by the Los Angeles Dodgers last June, turned down $2.4 million to pitch in Mississippi State, was undefeated on the year. Tigers bats are struggling. But Antoine Duplantis leads off the game with a solid single. Josh Smith then hits a base hit through the right side, and the Tigers got runners at first and third. Chris Reed gets a big hit. Giovanni DiGiacomo gets a big two-out hit. The Tigers score three runs in that first inning, and they never really looked back after that. Now, they struck out over 40 times in that three-game series, actually set a record for most strikeouts by an LSU team in a three-game series, but hey, they took two out of three against the number two team in the country, a team that offensively is really good. And while it was great to see LSU's bats come through, LSU's pitching was really good in the series. Yeah, Zach Hess did get knocked around a little bit on Thursday night, giving up three home runs. But I think overall a really good series for LSU and something they could really build upon moving forward.
Jeff, with the early series wrapping up the Thursday through Saturday slate, they're going to have the two midweek games. Do you like having the two midweek games like that to help build up, continue the momentum heading into the Texas A&M series?
Well, that was not the plan when the schedule first came out. The South Alabama game on Wednesday, that was actually scheduled earlier in the season, and it got postponed to this week. I think once you get into SEC play, you really try to limit your five-game weeks. You really don't want to play two midweek games heading into a conference week now, or a conference weekend. Now, it does help that the fact LSU last played on Saturday, so they had a couple days off before they play Grambling on Tuesday. But LSU is really limited in pitching right now. You know, Jaden Hill is down. Landon Marceau is down. Chase Costello is down. They got a lot of guys battling arm issues. And this is not really the time to be playing five games in one week, and they're playing they'll play a good Texas A&M team this weekend. So it's just part of it. You know, they'll have to really, I would imagine Mikhail Hilliard will start one of these games. Maybe Clay Moffitt will start another, but they're really going to have to manage their pitching over these next 2 days just to make sure they're ready to go on Friday when they take on Texas A&M. Devin Fontenot and Trent Vitmire had long relief outings during the Mississippi State series. But Matthew Beck didn't pitch at all, so he's ready to go. But they don't have a lot of options in the arms. A lot of guys got this arm soreness issue or battling some sort of arm problem. And they need to get those guys healthy. But they were able to avoid any big problems with their pitching shortage this past weekend because of the terrific job that Trent Vitmire and Devin Fontenot did out of the pen. I mean, eating up multiple innings, that was huge. And then they got 7 innings from Eric Walker on Saturday, which was a great start from him.
Let's talk a little bit about that further there, Jeff. It looked like it was kind of really the first extended kind of glimpse of Walker kind of returning to form. Where would you put his percentage at being back from the off season and the injury and the surgery? And do you think this was his best performance so far this year?
Oh, by far it was his best performance of the season, throwing 7 shutout innings. I mean, I would think he's probably about 90-95% back from that Tommy John surgery. I mean, that was really impressive. One thing I did notice from Mississippi State, they were a much better fastball hitting team than an off-speed hitting team. And maybe that was why they were able to tee off a little bit on Zach Hess on Thursday. But on Saturday, Cole Henry, or I should say Friday, game 2, Cole Henry mixed in his breaking ball a lot more than he normally has, went away from his fastball a little bit, and it befuddled the Mississippi State hitters. And then you get a guy like Eric Walker, who's such a finesse pitcher, he throws about 88, 89 miles an hour on the fastball. And he got a lot of swing and misses, got a lot of bad swings. There were a few hard-hit balls in that game on Saturday, but they were right at defenders, and that helped out as well. But I thought that was a terrific start. And I think when you look at LSU's weekend rotation now with Zach Hess, Cole Henry, and Eric Walker, you really feel good that two of those three guys are going to pitch really good for you and give you a chance to win. And that's exactly what happened this past weekend. Now, maybe this weekend against Texas A&M, maybe it's Zach Hess and Eric Walker that give you a good outing, and Cole Henry not so much. And maybe the weekend after that, it's Eric Walker who struggles. So I think LSU is really looking good with its weekend rotation. They got guys they can count out of the bullpen. Todd Peterson's a little bit of a question mark at this point. He's not getting a lot of swing and misses, and the teams are putting balls in play, and he hasn't really been hit too hard, but they're putting it in play in an area where guys aren't standing. And he's been the victim of some bad luck a little bit, but then again, he's also not getting the type of swing and misses that you need out of your closer, so that's still a question mark. But I still think there's five, six guys that you really can count on out of the staff here that you know they're going to give you a good outing. And I know Zach Hess got roughed up, and probably the questions will pop up again on whether he's truly a weekend starter, but I still think he's the best. He's got the best stuff out of anybody out of that staff, and you still keep him, obviously, as your game one starter on a weekend rotation.
We're talking to Jeff Palermo of the Louisiana Radio Network. He's also the co-host of Tiger Rag Radio. Tomorrow, LSU returns to the Alex Box Stadium. They'll take on the Grambling State Tigers. Pre-game show can be listened to live right here on 103.7 The Game at 6 o'clock. First pitch at 6:30. Jeff, I want to talk a little bit more about the pitching staff. I can't remember a time where an LSU team has been kind of this snake-bitten, whether it's with injuries or just soreness, a kind of a plaguing soreness of an entire pitching staff. I've never seen anything like it. What about you?
Yeah, it's been a little rough here as far as the injuries go. You know, last year they were hit with a bunch of injuries as well. A.J. Labus, Nick Storrs, Mikhail Hilliard went down. Of course, the year before that, Eric Walker went down. So this has really been, I would say, kind of a continuation of what we've been seeing here now the last couple of years. I don't know if there's any rhyme or reason for it. I think what makes this year a little bit weird is that it's the whole arm soreness thing. And you got multiple guys that are dealing with it, whereas A.J. Labis and Nick Storrs from a year ago, their injuries were a lot more severe. So I think they got to get to I don't have a rhyme or reason for it, but hopefully they can get some of these guys back. It would be really good to see a guy like Jaden Hill get back, because his two first starts were really electric. And you'd like to get him back. Chase Costello, there were a lot of expectations that he'd be a really good guy coming out of the pen this year. It really hasn't worked out for him. Landon Marceau, another freshman. And who knows, maybe, you know, especially when you're talking about Marceau and Jaden Hill, a couple of freshmen, maybe they're trying to do some things a little bit differently because they've made the jump from high school ball to college ball, and they've put some extra strain on their arm, and now they're having to deal with it. Maybe that's it. But I think that's just kind of the nature of the way it is now with pitching, that guys, it's tough to keep pitchers healthy at times. And LSU's battling with that right now, but there's enough help, enough guys to go around to especially during a weekend rotation, as long as they don't get too burned out during the midweek, especially during a weekend series. They got enough pitching to get through three games.
Jeff, you mentioned a freshman like Landon Moore. So I want to talk a little bit about a different freshman, first baseman C.J. Willis. You know, he was in the mix to be a starter to start off the season. He didn't win that competition, but he had himself a hell of a weekend, the young man from North Louisiana. How impressed were you with what C.J. was able to do in this series?
He gave him a spark. I mean, that was huge what he was able to do this week. I mean, he comes into the game on Thursday as a pinch hitter. He's got two strikes on him and hits a double, an RBI double. And Paul Mainieri rewards him and puts him in the lineup on Friday, and he gets three RBIs for you there. Picked up another RBI on Saturday. It was exactly what LSU was looking for. I mean, I think LSU, Antoine DePlantis certainly led the offensive charge. He had a huge weekend, and they moved him up to the leadoff spot, dropped Josh Smith down to number two, and that switch seemed to ignite the offense on Friday and Saturday. But C.J. Willis was a big part of it as well. The bottom of the batting order has been a rough spot right now for LSU, and they put him in at the seventh spot in the lineup. And on Friday and Saturday, he delivered. He only had one hit on Friday, but he drove in three runs because he put the ball in play, made things happen, got a sacrifice fly. I think there was a ground out in there as well, and then he had an RBI single too. So that's exactly what they needed, because at this point, LSU offensively is getting nothing out of the second base position and nothing catcher-wise as far as offensively. Both Brant Broussard, Hal Hughes, Brock Mathis, they're all hitting under 200. Saul Garza's had some chances to take over as the starting catcher. He can't hit the ball out of the infield despite having massive BP power. I mean, the guy launches some home runs in batting practice, but it's not translating to what you're seeing in the game. So there's a real issue as far as what LSU is going to do with the number 8-9 spot and what they're going to do with catcher and second base. I mean, they're shuffling guys in and out. Brock Mathis had a little bit better of a weekend hitting-wise, but still, again, he's hitting under 200 as a catcher. So that's a problem. So they needed somebody else on the bottom of the batting order to provide a spark, and C.J. Willis did it. And I think he'll be the first baseman until he scuffles again. I think Cade Beloso could be a guy that they can DH a little bit. One thing we got to look out here for, Daniel Cabrera is battling a little wrist injury, so don't expect him to play Tuesday or Wednesday. So that allows you to put the Giacomo in the outfield here for a couple games, have Beloso as the DH, and keep running C.J. Willis out there at first base and see if he can continue to make things happen in that LSU lineup.
Jeff, appreciate it as always, you making some time for us, brother. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll holler at you next week.
Sounds good, man. Have a good one.
Jeff Palermo, co-host of Tiger Rag Radio, also part of the Louisiana Sports Network. When we come back here on the Rap Game with RP3, going to be some raging Cajun baseball talk. They avoided the sweep. by taking the final game, but they still dropped yet another series. We'll dive into that right here on 103.7 The Game. Hey, friends. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards has proclaimed the month of April as Safe Digging Month here in Louisiana as part of a nationwide safety awareness campaign to draw attention to the importance of safe excavation. In Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. So if you or a contractor that you've hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or a garden, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. That's why it's so important for everyone to dial 811 and call Louisiana One Call 2 days before they dig. You just tell the operator your address and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. It's simple, it's free, and it's the law. All demolishers are required to notify Louisiana One Call before they begin work. The law applies to individuals as well as contractors, municipalities, and others. Failure to call can subject the person to fines and liability for damages to buried infrastructure. Call 811 and know what's below before you dig. Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I am your host, Raymond Parks III, right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Where sees the LSU baseball team got back on track with a road series against Mississippi State. The Raging Cajuns continue to struggle. They avoided the sweep, which is one positive, yesterday. They defeated the Men of Troy 4-3, and they did so with a couple of home runs. They got the big bats to help them avoid the sweep. Of the team's 9 hits, 3 went for extra bases, including 2 monster home runs. Handsome Monica blasted a 2-run shot, his 6th of the season, as he went 2-for-4 at the plate on Sunday. And Todd Lott knocked in 2 hits of his own and an RBI. And, of course, sophomore Hayden Cantrell, former Terlings Catholic star, was one of 4 other Raging Cajuns to post 1 hit and added to the team's other RBI. Jack Burke, he pitched 5 innings of decent work, 5 hits, no run baseball, and struck out 4 Trojans in his 2nd start of the season. Freshman Connor Cook, though, who's now 3-0 on there, he earned the win by allowing just an earned run and 1 hit in 1 inning of work. Gunnar Leger came in during the 9th and closed out the game for the save. But overall, the Cajuns, yes, they get the win, but they dropped yet another series against a Troy team that isn't very good. Louisiana is now 13-16 overall and 4-5 in Sun Belt play, and it's April. So the question remains for the Cajuns, Tony Robichaud's bunch, can they turn things around? They've been inconsistent all year. Gunnar Leger, who they were hoping was going to anchor the staff, he's now in the bullpen. They're getting great production at the plate, power hitting from Hanson Monica. Hayden Cantrell has been on a tear this year. But they're just not winning games. They have talented pieces in place, but it's not resulting in W's. Another series loss for the Cajuns. And they're going to have to turn it around quickly because now they've lost back-to-back series in Sun Belt play with App State and now at Troy. They come back to play Tuesday at the Teague when they host Southeastern Louisiana. First pitch will be 6:30. Then they play at Southeastern the following Wednesday in a makeup game. And then they'll be back at the Teague for a 3-game set against Ark State starting on Friday through Sunday. So, Raging Cajuns are going to have to fix things in a hurry. We're going to ask the king of all of Acadiana sports media, the Presidente the dean, the fearless leader himself, George Faust from KFY, when he joins us right here on the Rap Game with RP3 after this break on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I am your illustrious host, the most handsome man named Raymond here at 103.7 The Game. I'm also the only man named Raymond on the air here on 103.7 The Game. You like that, Cody? You like that? Oh, nice. Look, we've been talking a lot LSU stuff, but right before the break, we dove a little bit into Raging Cajuns baseball, their struggles. They did avoid the sweep, but another series loss, and they're piling up for Tony Robichaud's gang. So let's talk a little bit about more of that and get some insight from royalty. That's right, a royal perspective. As we head out to the Arco Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest, he is the sports director at KFY, and he is a friend of the show, the one and only George Faust. Fausty, how are you this morning, brother?
Doing good, man. Doing good. Been up a couple of hours. Got the kids off to school. Everything's rolling, man. Ready to talk sports.
Everything is rolling. My man is ready to talk sports. Well, let's start with the Raging Cajun baseball team. George, you've covered this team a long time, brother. This team just keeps dropping series left and right. Why has Tony Robichaud's bunch not been able to kind of put things together as we enter April?
I just think they haven't been able to find where their groove is, so to speak. You have a situation where they got thrown a curveball, and I know we talk about it, and it kind of seems like a broken record for those of us who know what records are. It really seems like the pitching hasn't been able to kind of come up to a level that they need it at this point. And because to tell you the truth, it seems like over the past week and a half or so, I mean, the bats have been pretty decent with regards to. I'm not sure what their team batting average is, but if you look around, I mean, guys seem to consistently get on base. I think it's maybe just a case of the pitching hasn't really panned out the way that they had hoped. Obviously, we know about the Gunner situation where he hasn't been able to kind of move into a starter role, and he's getting a couple of innings here and there and been able to kind of take care of that, but it hasn't been. It hasn't been what the Cajuns have hoped for or expected going forward here, and I think that's kind of where they're at right now. And look, a lot of things can happen. There's a lot of different ways for them to kind of turn it around. It'll only take just one guy deciding, hey, I'm going to step up, I'm going to be that guy, and then everybody will follow. That's usually how it works, and especially. In a sport like baseball, there's a lot of contagious stuff that happens. I mean, it kind of reminds me of watching the Natural, where losing is a disease. and Roy Hobbs gets up and it storms out, and a good old oatmeal man himself says, Hobbs, sit down. It's kind of that situation a little bit where it seems like they're just on the cusp of possibly being able to make something happen, and it just doesn't work out that way. But eventually it will. You just got to stay the course, so to speak, and play the games, because that's part of the deal. And so I think in the end, while this season isn't going to be what they had hoped or doesn't seem like it at this point, there's always the turnaround because, the point that keeps coming up in my head is, like, go look at 2013, 2014, the Cajuns kind of maybe didn't struggle, but they weren't the team they were in 2015 when they went to the host of the Super Regional. So things can turn on a dime It really can. And so you got to keep that positive attitude. It's hard to do when you're in the midst of continually losing conference series and having things not go your way. But the way baseball is built, things change, and they can change fast.
We're speaking with George Faust from KLFY, who apparently is a master of the Wilford Brimley impersonation. Because I'm assuming that's who you're trying to do there, brother.
No, sit down. Yeah, no. That's exactly Wilford Brimley. I actually couldn't think of his name, and I remember he did oatmeal commercials too. So
yes,
he's also on a show called Our House. You remember that show?
Yes, he was also in Cocoon.
Cocoon, yeah.
Yes.
Well, every old actor was in Cocoon.
Oh, every old actor was in Cocoon. Oh, Fausti, you mentioned about Gunnar Lache. Is he going to just be in the bullpen the remainder of the year, or what do you think?
Look, I mean, I think until he can kind of it might be a situation where they have to monitor how much he's in pain, you know, or how much he can handle. And you don't, you know, you expect that he's going to have a career after college. So if that does happen, I mean, you're cognizant of it, but that's not your ultimate goal if you're Coach Robichaux and the staff there. You want him to do the best for you, but you also have to think about his future as well. So I think maybe it's just something, hey, we need to get him in there. He needs to get some innings. I don't know if he's feeling pain in his arm or can't do, or wherever, and he's not in a position to start, then yeah, get him a few innings at the end. And look, it happens all the time. Pitchers change their style. You just have to kind of change your mindset as a pitcher. But I would say, do I think that's a good move? Absolutely, because I think he can't not have. Does that make sense? You can't not have him on the field in some way, shape, or form. He's just that good of an athlete, so he has to be out there. You know what I mean? So, and you want to be able to use him because, he's going to help your team. He's just that kind of athlete, that kind of competitor, and you want him on the field. And if that's the only way he gets on the field, then so be it. Obviously, the Cajuns would love to have him give him seven innings of shut out baseball, but sometimes that just doesn't happen.
That's exactly. And pint-sized Prince or Princess Faust just gave us another level. Also commentary
she tried to open a door and fell down and it wasn't too pleased with it. She doesn't like the fact that Gunnar Lache is injured.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's what she's really trying to tell you there, Pop. And she's like, what the hell? I don't like Gunnar being banged up either. Let's stay with the Cajuns, George. Softball team, they are just absolutely on a tear. They are undefeated in Sun Belt play. I want to start with Summer Ellison. She now has a nation-leading 20 wins, and she did that before April. First question for you about her. You know, you and I both covered her in high school, where she was a star there at Turlings Catholic.
Right.
You know, her career at the Raging Cajuns started off slow, but under Jerry Glasgow, she has blossomed, and she had a great year last year. She's even better this year. Why do you think she has developed into one of the best pitchers, not only in the Sun Belt Conference, but in the country?
It's just work ethic, too. I think it's coaching and work ethic and in her talent. Obviously, she's got the it factor. I had a chance to talk to her one-on-one last year for Inside Cajun Nation, and she just is one of those. She didn't talk a whole lot, but I think it's kind of just it's one of those things. She has they talk about the it factor. She's the leader. She just has it. It's hard to describe because she goes out there, she does her business, whatever the situation is, she flips the script into, hey, I got to take care of this, I got to make this happen, and she does the job, and I think that's what makes her so appealing. And obviously she has the talent. We've seen that. She brought it on. I mean, whether or not Coach Glasgow decides to use her every game the rest of the way or he doesn't, one thing's for sure, the girl, I don't know if her arm will fall off or not, but the truth be told, she's definitely one of those players that can carry a team, no doubt about it. I mean, we've seen that so far this year. And my only concern, of course, is when you get to the postseason, I think I said this when we talked about him last week or a couple weeks ago, whatever it was, that you like to have somebody to give her a little break because you're going to have to play two games in a championship series or something like that. You want that second arm to kind of give her a break and then she can come back later in that. But other than that, I it's just amazing to watch. She just has that leadership quality, that talent, that it factor, and the Cajuns are benefiting from it.
George, did you anticipate, we knew expectations would be high this year, especially with the talent that they had coming back, and then it's actually, you know, Jerry's second year recruiting with he and his staff. Did you anticipate the Cajuns being just this good, though?
You know what? I actually did. The only reason I say that, they were hungry, you know, and I think there's a lot for the, they're playing for a lot this year, obviously with the coach's daughter passing away before the season and things like that. That stuff, that's intangible that adds to, gives the season a little bit more meaning. And I'm not saying like that's what there is on the forefront of their mind. I think they're just going out and playing. But when they at the end of the season, they're going to look up and go, "Man, we did this," and you know, we had that you know, Jerry Ann, who's Coach Glasgow's daughter, that was in the action. You know, she may have been gotten this along the way, you know, and so yeah, I think it's. It's a couple of things that I didn't know that they would. I had a feeling they could be really good. You don't expect Cajun softball not to be good. It's been the best program in the university at the University of Louisiana for years. So you always expect them to be good. It's kind of like Duke basketball, or you know, they're always going to be around at the end of the year, and you know, stuff like that. The Cajun softball team is just one of those programs nationally that it's recognized as one of the best in the country, and consistently so. So I think that I expect it a little bit because I've seen it so many times. What would have shocked me is if they came out and laid an egg, or not an egg, but if they didn't compete at this high level, because I'm used to seeing it. And that's the way this program has been built. Coach Glasgow is doing a phenomenal job of kind of making this program into even more than it would have been in the past. And that's saying a lot, because this program's kind of carried the flag for Cajun athletics, if you will. The softball team's pretty impressive and always has been.
We're speaking to the president, leader, Dean Cain himself, the king himself, George Faust. Of KLFY. Fausty, we didn't get to talk about this last week, but last week it was announced that, you know, the NFL is going to let teams and their fan bases select their top moments in franchise history. Not top games, but top moments. And then those moments are going to be part of a larger countdown where they're going to celebrate 100 years of professional football. We put it out there on the Twitters about that. And you know, we gave the option. In my mind, it's the Holy Trinity. It's the Tracy Porter interception in the Super Bowl return. It is Dempsey's boot from back in the day. And then it was Steve Gleason's block in the return to the Superdome. And then we had other. If you had to pick a top four or top three, what would your top three be?
It's just one play? Or it's not like I was going to say the Saints Super Bowl. Like,
it's one play. It's one play.
So you have to do one play.
Correct.
Oh, my goodness. Holy cow. I think there's a couple that I would – I think those are the big – obviously, Tracy Porter's interception, that's got to be the number one. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I like Steve Gleason's block as two. That's pretty impressive on a night where, you have to be, you have to understand the surroundings around that. That's what makes that play so huge. It's probably the most relevant play in the history of the Saints, but it's not in the whole realm of just what it was, because it meant so much more to the community and to the city. But that Tracy Porter interception, I think, is just a little bit bigger because that secured a Super Bowl on the field. I think that's bigger. Is there something else? Maybe the only other one I would throw in there would be because I love the Tom Dempsey kick. That's awesome. I went to school with Tom Dempsey's son at Rummel. That was pretty cool.
Name drop by the King. Continue.
I got to meet him one time. I was in awe. I'm like, man, this is awesome. I'm trying to think. Oh yeah, the only other one I would kind of add in there was Akeem dropped the ball. That first playoff win for the Saints, that was a pretty big one. I would probably be a distant fourth with regards, but I think you nailed it pretty solid with all the first three. But for me, the Super Bowl is the number one. It's got to be. The Steve Gleason block is huge, but it was in a regular season game and a season opener, which made it cool. But it didn't secure a Super Bowl to me. I guess that's a sports purist. I those are one and one A. I think would be the way I'd label it. And then you'd have Dempsey. That was pretty cool because that record stood for forever. And the only guy that could break it was in Denver. It seems like every time they break the record, they're in Denver where the air is thinner.
Well, Fausty, brother, I appreciate you making some time for us. Tell Princess Faust we appreciate her commentary on Gunnar Leje situation as well. you've set the bar high. You gave us a Wilford Brimley impersonation. You have a week to bring something else to the table next week.
Now all these millennials are going to look and Google who the heck is Wilford Brimley. Fausty, watch the natural, people. Watch the natural.
Fausty, appreciate it, brother. You have a great one, my friend.
All right, man. Talk to you later.
George Faust, KFY.
Wilford Brimley now probably most known for his appearances in Family Guy.
And for the diabetes
commercial. His diabetes commercial. That Family Guy makes fun of the diabetes commercial. He woke up in the middle of the night, got real angry, and he struck his wife. But then he remembered his wife has been dead for like 20 years. Who the hell did I hit?
Oh, they had a good run with Wilford. Faust just came out with Wilford Brimley for no. I know he did. He went with the natural, then all of a sudden he brought in Wilford Brimley. I was like, he brought in Wilford Brimley. That's a good way to end the show. That's a fun way to end the show.
And it's a good way to raise diabetes awareness.
There we go. See? Oh, there it is. Positive all right. Well, we'll wrap up this Monday edition of the Rap Game with RP3 here after this break on 103.7 The Game.
Yeah, I got the power. I know the powers that be. Yeah. No, you don't know nada. I don't know how you can see. Yeah, for these unbelievable dreams, had to do more than it seems. I speak of these things. Now I got trophies and rings. This is the victory thing. I got this.
Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3 here on 103.7 The Game. Just a quick reminder, guys, go to the 103.7 The Game homepage. Click on the link for the 2019 Masters Tournament Challenge. It's your chance, real easy, to win a $100 gift card from golfballs.com. It's easy. You just sign up and you just pick the golfer. That's all you got to do. Just pick a name, throw it out there, and if your golfer wins the 2019 Masters, you get a $100 gift card from golfballs.com. It's just that easy.
I think I'm going to go with Shooter McGavin.
I'm going to go with Bob Barker. If the winning golfer is selected by more than one entry, we will put all the correct entries in a raffle and select a winner. So go take part in the 2019 Masters Tournament challenge. I want to thank our guest today, Jarrett Rozier from TigerDetails.com, Jeff Palermo, co-host of Tiger Ag Radio and the LSU Radio Network, and the Dean Cain Presidente himself, George Faust, for coming on. Tomorrow we'll have Andrew Juge from the Saints Happy Hour podcast. It'll be from 6 to 8, so make sure to tune in. Up next, Dan Patrick tonight, Paul Menary Show, live at 7 o'clock right here on 103.7 The Game.
Happy WrestleMania week!
Happy WrestleMania week. Y'all have a great day. Talk to you tomorrow.